You will please rise. Your heart and join me pledging our allegiance to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Director Amezcua.
Present.
Yeah, she said present.
Heard something.
Okay.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
We can't hear you.
It's very,
Director.
Very faint.
I can hear great.
No, we still
can you hear us?
I can hear Steve really well. Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Director Bilodeau?
Present.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks? Director Wynn? Director Sheldon?
Here.
Director Tran?
Here.
Director Wigan?
Here.
Director Whitaker?
Here.
Director Yeo?
Here.
Okay. You do have a quorum with eight directors present.
Okay. Do we have any items received too late to be agendized? Okay. Do we have any visitors who would like to speak? We'll listen. Anybody? Nobody, huh? Okay. I think we're going to delay the public hearing for a few minutes. So can we take the rest of the, moving on to the consent calendar? Do we have a motion?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
I'd like to,
yes,
on one of the bills on item number four, do I need to pull it if I wish to make a
Please.
Change that? Okay, I'll
Please.
Pull item four.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so can you amend all but?
Sure, I'll move to approve the
The second holds, yes.
Okay.
Okay, roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Wigan?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with eight yes votes with Directors Meeks and Wynn absent.
Okay. And moving on to item four, to State Ledge.
Yeah, just on Assembly Bill 2515, the Pappin Bill, I'd like to just register my opposition to that instead of support. So I'm not sure. I don't want to tank that by any means. So I don't know the protocols here, but maybe just if I approve that item with Director Wigan not supporting that, I don't know how that would work here.
You can vote. You can indicate that you're voting yes, because this is going to have to come back up for a vote on just item four. You can say yes, except as to whichever bill you have.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, there's just a poison pill in that creates a private right of action for enforcement on there that I think that is disruptive to business. And
you can certainly note that.
Okay.
Madam President?
Yes.
I'd be pleased if Director Wigan could provide some more information on that bill, on his concerns. I may share his point of view.
Yeah, it just is an attack on products and business that create these products for it's consumed by a lot of people, and I just take issue to attacking those corporations or businesses that with penalties and fines for violations that, maybe they don't have the ability to create these products without PFAS. So, it just kind of, when we had this discussion in committee, I kind of sat silent and I was, kind of debating whether I would be supportive or opposing to that. And there's just too much in there that, more unknowns than anything. I'm not an expert on this particular topic and how it affects the water industry. I'm sure that the position that this district would have on it is a good one. It's just there's a lot to it that would affect consumers and those that are purchasing these products. So it just kind of stuck with me that I felt I should say that I was against supporting it.
Okay.
And my assembly member who represents my area is in opposition to it. It was just heard in committee the other day and she voted no as well. So that's all I could probably say on it.
Okay.
Madam President?
Yes.
May I make a motion on this item?
Before, Madam President, if I may speak on this item as well.
Yes. I'll
before you make the motion.
No problem. I didn't know you, of course.
Right. I briefly looked at this bill, AB 2515, from Assemblymember Papin, a Democrat from San Mateo. And it basically says here, there's not a lot of information other than the fact that the bill it basically says that if there's 10 parts per trillion of PFAS or above, that may trigger this law, if it becomes law. And there is a private right of action to enforce this this bill, which may turn into law later, for $5,000 for the initial violation and $10,000 for subsequent violations, assuming that that means that consumers will have the right to file suit. So this in Sacramento language or under the dome, it would be a job killer, anti-business bill. And I assume that many of the manufacturers or the Chamber of Commerce would be opposing this bill. So having said that, I would agree.
Okay. Okay. Director Sheldon, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Madam President. Yes, in light of these comments and in light of what I believe is unresolved science on the matter, I'd like to move that we put this bill over. Rather, I move that we defer this bill back to the LegCom committee.
Yeah, I would second that if that's a motion, but I think that's a good idea because then that gives our staff some time to research it and the folks that would impact.
Yeah. Director Bilodeau.
Yeah, I was just curious. Is Gina in the room? If
Gina is.
If the author of the bill had asked for us to take a position, or if this was just on a regular list of bills that we were just monitoring. I didn't know how we stumbled upon this specific bill to take a position on.
And with the guidance of our legal counsel, they just recommended that we may want to consider it to lessen the amount of PFAS in the environment, but halfway up to the board's discretion.
Okay, so maybe we just eventually just take a pass on taking a position. Or something. So that's enough.
Okay. So we have a motion to take a pass.
So is there a motion on? So you have other items also right now. So would the motion be to approve all items other than AB 2515 and 2515 to return that to the ComLeg committee for further consideration by the committee? Is that
remand it? Yes. Absolutely.
Is that,
yeah, yeah, that's great for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's the motion.
Okay. Roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes. Put on? Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Wygant?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 9 yes votes with Director Wynn absent.
Who is our second?
Chair, may I make a statement or ask a question, please?
Yes, please.
I would just like to ask that when it comes back to the ComLeg, that all of the information is provided beforehand. And you guys do a great job, but give us all that information beforehand so we can review it thoroughly. because we're talking about businesses and how it might affect them, takes them out of business or puts them in a precarious situation. I would like to know as much information as possible, please. Thank you.
Okay.
We got that. Yeah. Good. Okay. And now we want to move on to PFAS.
Yeah, I was going to suggest item 16 on the agenda. Okay. Go ahead, Jason.
Great. Thanks, John. Good evening, members of the board. Want to provide you with this informational item, update you on the status of national PFAS drinking water regulations, which were recently released by US EPA. So US EPA released these last Wednesday. They did a pre-publication notice in the Federal Register. So it's sort of, we expect these to be finalized and released in the Federal Register within the next week or so. So as expected, they're pretty similar to the draft regulations we saw last year about this time. The drinking water MCLs for PFOA and PFOS have been maintained at 4 parts per trillion as proposed last year. A new twist on it is they've also come up with individual MCLs for 3 additional PFAS, as shown here, PFHXS, PFNA, and then Gen X. These are previously only in the hazard index, sort of the combined MCL that they proposed last year, but they've decided to leave them in that combined MCL where they all get weighted together, but then also have these individual MCLs. So you can be, deemed not in compliance if one of them exceeds these thresholds, or if the sum of them do through the hazard index as shown here. And just a quick nuance, the hazard index was revised from being 1, they added a decimal place, and now it's 1.0. So it's a little less forgiving in that regard. And the big thing in terms of the compliance period EPA listed here was traditionally under the Safe Drinking Water Act, it's a 3-year time to come into compliance with it, but EPA can allow up to 5 years either themselves or through the states. And they have determined to allow systems the full 5 years for these at the federal level. So that's the federal expectation, is that folks will be in compliance with these by 2029. Just real briefly on the hazard index, it just basically, combines the 4 PFAS shown here, takes your measurements of them, compares them to their health thresholds, and then if that exceeds that 1, you get a violation of that. And all these are taken on a running annual average. So it's not just one sample puts you out of compliance. It has to be basically your average over the course of a year.
Jason?
Yeah?
When you had the 2010, all those are parts per trillion.
Correct. These are all parts per trillion values. Correct.
Okay. And then the 1, what, that's the hazardous index. What is that?
Yeah. So if you add them all up, so let's, in this example here, let's say your Gen X value was 5. So 5 over 10, that gives you half or 0.5. And let's say PFNA was another 5. That's half, or, you'd be, half plus half is 1. So you'd be right at that limit based on those 2 compounds. Whereas maybe individually, based on their individual MCLs, you would not. But if you add them up collectively, it would push you over into a non-compliance situation. Okay. That's how you get to the 1.
Okay. Thank you.
So just real quick in the basin, in terms of, we talked about this with the board before, we projected the impacts, and they're very consistent with our projections from before because the rule isn't that different than what was proposed last year. Just a reminder, we have about 220 large wells in the basin. We have 38 wells now with active systems operating through our PFAS treatment program. 24 additional wells in design or construction, and again, response to the state advisories. And then we project 40 additional wells would now be triggered by this. You can see where they are on the map. So they're kind of on the fringe of the impacted area now. As you go to that lower standard, right, we detect the PFAS in additional wells at 4 parts per trillion versus where we were detecting it at 10. So it's just kind of shows the scope of the and breadth of the impacts under the new EPA regulation. Just want to switch to the state a little bit now. So now that the ball is kind of in the state's court a little bit, I won't spend a lot of time on the public health goals, but just to let the board know that these were finalized very recently, actually right before EPA released this MCL, the State Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, or OEHA, a division within Cal EPA, finalized their public health goals for PFOA and PFOS, unchanged from where they were originally proposed a couple years ago. The PFOA public health goal, which corresponds to a 1 in 1 million kidney cancer risk, is at 0.007 parts per trillion, or 7 parts per quadrillion. That is based on a review of human epidemiological data, looking at the occurrence of kidney cancer and comparing that to the level of PFOA in folks' blood. And then the PFOS public health goal is set at 1 part per trillion based on liver and pancreatic tumors observed in laboratory studies with laboratory animals. So these will kind of create the basis for the state MCLs. But interestingly, you know, what the state can do now is now the EPA has finalized their regulation. The state can simply adopt that. In many cases, they'll be required to do that, right? They have to adopt that or nothing less strict than what the federal government has proposed. And our discussions with them when the draft was out last year, they seem pretty satisfied with the draft provisions. A lot of the same numbers we're talking about today. But at that time, EPA proposed a 3-year compliance period, kind of the standard in the Safe Drinking Water Act. Well, that's now with this final proposal or the final rule from EPA, they've changed that to 5 years now. And it's unclear right now if the state regulators are comfortable going along with that 5-year compliance period that EPA is allowing. In state law, the state, we believe, could move ahead more quickly and stick to that 3-year time frame. It's our understanding is no determination has been made at the state level that they're discussing this. But I think people do feel that this is within the state's discretion to decide when to enforce this, whether 3-year or 5-year time period. So we're continuing to monitor that. And I think, we believe the EPA has done a lot of work leading to the 5-year compliance period. These are chronic health contaminants. And I think EPA has acknowledged just the time and effort it's going to take nationwide for systems to come in compliance. That's why they changed it to a 5-year period from the draft to now. And so I think it's our hope that the state would respect that and the analysis that the federal government has done to allow that 5-year period. But we'll continue to monitor that. That's all I have now. Just a brief overview update on that. I'm happy to take any questions from the board about the EPA regulation.
Questions or comments?
Director Sheldon has his hand.
Oh, hey, Director Sheldon.
Thank you, Madam President. Let me go to my right screen here, correct screen. So we all agree that high levels of PFAS is dangerous to humans. We all agree on that, myself included, of course. But at the levels of 1 part per trillion, 2 part per trillion, less than 1 part per trillion, what I've read, the science is not settled. And what I see is the regulators taking the PFAS in the water and extrapolating that we would have that same level of PFAS in our bodies. The study that Dr. Bartel did and the results that I got from Jason Dadigas is that of the first 50 participants, their average PFAS parts per trillion score was, not score rate group, score rating was, or test results was 1.6 parts per trillion, significantly low. I think I've told the board, my PFAS results came back. None of them were less, where we're more than one part per trillion. The average I put it about 0.58 part per trillion. I don't know the right process, Madam President, or for Mr. Kennedy, but to have the board be provided an opportunity, they'd like to be tested. Let's see what PFAS is really doing in the human body, not what it's not so much the water, which is important, other products, but what is it doing? Doesn't appear to me to be a correlation, particularly from having consumed Santa Ana River water for quite a long for decades. So, Madam President, what do you recommend, or staff, what do you recommend as an opportunity to make this available to our board members? And I think we really need to dig deep, because these numbers don't seem to me to be coming back how I thought that they may, in light of the regulations and in light of the tests. And I think our results are much, much, much lower than these tests that are these studies that were done a decade ago or two decades ago.
Yeah, we could come back to the board with some information on how we could do that testing, if the board members are interested in testing themselves, and the cost and how exactly we would do it. We could bring that to the board, first board meeting in May, put it on the agenda and have that information available.
I think someone mentioned it's a cost of $250 per test. Certainly, as we peel this back, we're going to commit ourselves to another $1 billion. We really need to get good science on how it's affecting humans at the level, and particularly us that are in an area that is very impacted by PFAS. You know, South Orange County doesn't get its drinking water from the Santa Ana River. It's imported. They don't have the same situation. We're uniquely situated as other areas in California.
Director Bilodeau.
Director Sheldon, you can go to Quest Diagnostics right now and get tested for $299. I've gotten my blood tested. I'm over 20 parts per trillion in my blood. And
was that typical to your household?
No, it was not. But I don't want to talk about my household situation.
Well,
I don't want to violate their HIPAA rights.
Could yours be a particular? Maybe yours a particular.
My liver's feeling pretty good, unless I'm drinking or something.
But. Well, the first 50 participants in Dr. Bartel's testing from UCI, their average score was 1.6. So there must be some particular situation, Dennis, in your
yeah, and
so
yes,
average
I just don't
1.6
know. I just don't know what giving people that data is going to tell them, though.
Well, I'm thinking that we're going to be similar to, or something like what's in our drinking water. We're not, and I've read these studies, and the participants have significantly higher test results, significantly higher. So again, I think it's right to question what's going on, and do we have the science to support spending in California tens of billions of dollars? I'm surprised that you're not asking these same questions. We're just going to write checks and not and accept all the information. I don't do that anymore.
Well, I think that we just have to respond to these regulations that the EPA has set out. I don't know that it's up to us.
So, well, I don't just roll over and take things that I don't think are right and just.
Director Van?
Oh, me?
I'm sorry, Director.
Yeah, I, Madam President, I agree with the intention and the goal that Director Sheldon wanted to do. My fear is that this is way above our pay grade, in the sense that, okay, we're doing the tests, but what's our end game here? Okay, that's the ultimate objective. If we're going to change policy, or if we're going to change the requirements or the parts or the particles, whatever that the EPA has mandated down from Washington, D.C., 3,000 miles away. Okay, locally, we don't like the numbers, and we have a lot of questions and issues and suspicions about these numbers. It goes to the tests and the results. And once again, we just don't, as a board, as an agency, we don't have the technical or the scientific wherewithal to challenge this on an episodic that all the board members are going to take the test. And that's going to be, you know, we're the guinea pigs, and we're going to show them how to do that. I don't know if that's the best way to deal with this issue, other than litigation or questioning the results, the ultimate results that the EPA, the data the EPA is using to mandate not only with OCWD, but nationally with all the water agencies. My concern actually is more about what we can do as an agency. First of all, I'm more interested in, and I think a number of the newer members of the board here, directors here, would like to know, how do we know that we are above? Okay, you put on a photo or a graph showing that all of these wells are affected with the new mandates, 4 parts per trillion, right? But how do we know that 44 more wells are going to be affected by this? I'd like to know that. And secondly, are we doing testing every day with the water, and therefore we know exactly which well is going to be affected or not? And secondly, what are we doing, and how can we do this to remedy the PFAS amount with less? For me, actually, it's about money, and I think for all of us here, to try to save money. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars to remedy what the EPA wanted us to do. Are there ways, or the technology, now given the fact that this is something that's very new, relatively new with the science, and there are a lot of questions related to this science, including Director Sheldon, who has a lot of questions about this. We are 5 years out to comply with this. Will there be a new technology from now until 5 years later that will save us some money, you know, that would be introduced, on how to deal or on how to remedy this issue? And also, from a regulatory standpoint, I'd like to know, how do we know that we are in compliance once we put all of these mechanisms or tools in to try to mediate or mitigate the amount of PFAS particles in the water? And is there going to be an audit from the federal government that they will come down and they'll test the water? Or, well, what kind of engagements are we having with these folks? I think those are the issues that we, as directors, that we can control or at least talk about. As far as the science is concerned, I think that's way above our pay grade, and it's going to be in some laboratory that would be brought out with the data. And if there are disputes, then you know, let's do it the old-fashioned way and file a lawsuit and bring those data out. That's my thoughts on this.
Jason, you want to address the testing, at least, how that works? Yeah.
Sure. Dr. Chan, so all the wells that were shown in that graphic in terms of affected today or will be affected under the regulation, that's based on testing that's been completed to date. Testing completed by our laboratory here at the district that's accredited to do this type of testing for the producers. And those wells have been tested either primarily through orders from the state of California, has mandated that testing over the last several years. In a handful of cases, some of the producers have tested their wells voluntarily to gain that information. So that's how we know that those wells test, you know, consistently above one of these important thresholds, be it a state of California advisory or these new proposed MCLs. So that's based on real information, real data we have. And in terms of ongoing compliance, once in 5 years, once that's required, our laboratory and our staff here would continue to do that monitoring of not just the wells, but now the treatment systems that we're installing will have requirements to the state in terms of how you operate them. You need to verify that they're working on a monthly, a quarterly basis, typically, is how the state requires you to show, hey, the treatment is working properly. And so the plan, that's how we would demonstrate compliance with those once they're built through that testing. And if I just one more thing, I mean, it's on the science part of it, Director Sheldon referenced Dr. Bartel from UCI presenting to the board, I think last year, about the first 50 cases that they reviewed here. My understanding is all the blood serum data is in from the study. It's been distributed to the participants now. And so we can certainly ask Dr. Bartel to come back to see what the whole study population looks like. If the board would be interested in that, we could arrange for that.
Thank you. And I did want to add, you know, we don't necessarily like the news, but we were very pleased that we're going to get 5 years to implement this. Now, the key now will be to get the state to also give us a 5-year implementation period. And we've actually already started that lobbying campaign. We sent a letter this morning from the board president to the head of the regional board. I was in Sacramento this morning lobbying to give us for the state to give us a 5-year implementation period. So that will stretch out the financial impact. It'll give us rate relief. It'll give us longer time to actually build these facilities. You know, the first couple of years we can be designing and watching what's happening. And then maybe years 3, 4, and 5, we're actually constructing. But if we can get the state to go to a 5-year implementation period, it will help us a lot with our future rates. They will not have to be as steep as we've shown the board, the increases.
Director Yeo?
Yeah, forgot that I requested to speak. Thank you, Madam President. Yeah, Director Tran articulated eloquently a lot of the things that was on my mind. And I got a question for Jason. You know, for them to determine that, how do they know that this substance may have caused or be a contributing factor toward certain diseases? Do they draw blood from those who have the type of disease? And you're nodding your head. Okay, yeah. I was thinking in my head, that how do they do that? And I was thinking about Director Shelton's comment and Director Bilodeau's. You know, we all have different habits in our lives, and some love fast food more than others. and some of us have the privilege to have an RO system under our kitchen sink. So, you know, if this is, there is science behind this, and there's a mandate for us to take actions, I want to say that we're not doing this for the 10 of us. I don't want to be a test subject. I mean, we're doing this for the population, for the 2.5 million people we serve. So, you know, John mentioned that we're in a campaign to try to lobby the Californian regulatory agency to allow us that the 5 years, you know, instead of 3. So perhaps something will come up. And then there's better science that, as Director Tran mentioned, that maybe we don't have to go to the extent of treating that many. Hopefully that's the case. But, you know, otherwise we just have to do what's right for our constituents. Thank you.
Any other comments?
Director Sheldon has his hand raised.
Okay. Director Sheldon.
Thank you. I'll finish up. Director Tran, every fire starts with a spark. And as the directors on this board, I believe we have an obligation to look into this more. The science I'm talking about is, does the amount of PFAS in the water correlate to the PFAS in our body? That's my point. We just heard about a legislation to allow private cause of action. Any attorneys can sue a company that has a product with more than 10 parts per trillion. Well, do we know what harm comes from that 10 parts per trillion? How much of it ends up in the human body? I don't think any members of the legislature even have a clue. They have a clue of what they have. They've been eating McDonald's French fries for their whole life with PFAS-infected wrappers. They don't know what they have. They don't know what they're doing. There is a scare going across our country on this PFAS issue, and we don't know really what it is, because the harm it's claimed does not correlate to the PFAS in the results that I've seen so far. And I think we have an obligation to start. I'd like to ask, I think we need to really understand more about this. That has not been looked at. And there's a lot of harm that can come to this county, this state, this nation from the type of things that are in that legislation and so many other. I'm just surprised that we don't want to know more information about what we have. Because if it doesn't affect, where is the science that says 20 parts per trillion in the water is going to put you X parts per trillion in your body? I can't find that science. I don't know if Jason Dadicus knows of such science. I don't believe they have it. They don't know really what it is. And we're passing all these laws, spending tens and tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions nationwide, probably. And we're going to start letting companies get sued because their cereal box, the plastic wrapper in the cereal box has PFAS on it. I mean, this is, well, every fire starts with a spark, and we need to at least start talking about what's the harm to humans from this, not how much of it is in our water.
Director Whitaker.
Yes, thank you, President Green. You know, PFAS has just been so, over the last many decades, it's been so everywhere within our environment. And early on, we had concerns about the focus on drinking water only. And I know Director Bilodeau has talked about being very liberal with 3M Scotchgard at times in the past. And so we all have varied experiences and contacts with these substances, sometimes fairly large contacts, because it wasn't known as to the dangers that might be inherent in that. So I've always been interested in hearing from Dr. Bartel, who we're very fortunate to have local, national expert on this topic. And I would certainly welcome your suggestion, Jason, to get periodic updates from him. That's a resource that we shouldn't ignore at all. But as far as the danger from the rest of our environment besides drinking water, I think that still needs to be pursued in a fairly large way. And so if we have a few more years to kind of push back on this, I'm certainly on board with that.
Director Tran?
Yeah, very quickly. I don't disagree at all with Director Sheldon, and actually agree with him. I think this goes beyond the discussion on this panel here. Now, if we want to draft a strategy to fight this, because we have issues and questions and concerns about the science and the data, I bet you that before the EPA mandated or adopted its policy, the 4 parts per trillion, it probably has a series of hearings, and there are all types of interests and businesses coming out and data, different nonprofits, organizations nationally, if not internationally, also pile on and speak on behalf in opposition, as well as in support of the new mandates. Now, if we want to fight this, and once again, this is beyond the discussion for tonight, but very quickly, if we have issues and we want to oppose this, we have to ally ourselves with the science, and there are plenty of resources out there that we can tap in, including Dr. Bartels. I'm sure he's been involved in this. He would know all the organizations who are in opposition to the new mandates that he can connect us with, and we can find out ourselves, because all of these documentations are all printed in the CFR in government documents during the review periods also. So I can see this once again. It's pretty much the same concept as lobbying for or against pieces of legislation that Director Wigand mentioned about with the previous piece of legislation. You're going to have opponents, and you're going to have proponents of certain types of legislation or regulations or mandates, and they'll have their own data, they'll have their own information. Now, maybe down the road, some of these proponents or opponents will file, you know, it's going to end up in courts, and that's where it's going to be resolved when the dispute is not resolved at the regulatory level.
Director Amezcua?
I don't have my hand up to speak. I apologize.
I think it's Doug Reinhardt.
Yes.
Oh.
I did.
Is it me?
Did you?
I did have my.
Okay, it's Director Meeks. Sorry.
Okay. I mean, I agree with Director Tran that we're not the body to complete the scientific analysis of this kind of issue. If the board has concerns about the findings, you know, do we partner with the university? I mean, I'd like to hear from Dr. Bartel and see where he is on it and what kind of things he's studying. But we are not going to be in a position to fight this legislation based on us doing blood work, you know? So, so I think that, you know, if in fact we feel it's not accurate after all that it's been through, we need to have a way different strategy and partner with other people that have those same beliefs and partner with, like I said, a university or a laboratory or somebody that does that kind of work, because us doing something that is not scientifically controlled is a waste of time and money.
Yeah, Madam President, I just want to clarify, I am not suggesting we enter into a fight. I'm suggesting we get information. I'm not suggesting that us 10 is going to be the scientific sampling. I'm only saying, hey, we're the first start, and I think others should get tested as well. It just, if we're going to ask people to do things, are we going to ask questions? We might as well have done it ourselves. That's all I meant to say. So if I was thought differently, I apologize if I misspoke. It was just everything's got to start somewhere. And I got tested. I saw the results. Other people have gotten tested and saw the results. And I'm surprised by them, because then I guess I want to ask the question to Jason. Is there any science on how the PFAS in water or in products then extrapolates into the human body? So that, you know, yeah. Is that available? Because that doesn't seem to be occurring here.
Yeah, Director Sheldon, there are some studies that have been starting with the work in Central Ohio, which try to, you know, demonstrate that relationship between consistent exposure, you know, drinking 2 liters of PFAS impacted water every day, and then what folks' serum looks like in that situation. There are studies that show that relationship, show the bioaccumulation effect, the fact that it sticks around our bodies for a longer period of time, which is one of the reasons why it's so damaging, kind of the half-life of it in your system, how long it takes to excrete. There are some studies up on that, and I believe Dr. Bartel has participated in some of those, especially the work in Ohio. So that is also something he could address if he were to speak to the board about the local study and beyond.
And how many people drink 2 liters of water every day, 365 days a year for 40 years? Not very many.
Okay, Director Nguyen?
Yeah, I have a question for staff. Based on what Director Sheldon is recommending, is that feasible and would that have minimal impact if we were to do what he recommends?
Well, we should find, as Director Meeks mentioned, find other people with the same concern and maybe partner up with them. We do expect people will object to what the EPA has just come out with. And we can see what those people are going to say to the EPA and their objection and maybe initiate litigation. So you'll have parties like that trying to block the EPA action. So we can find out what's happening there. So, but yeah, we can bring a lot more information back to the board to help you make a decision moving forward.
I'm not, I don't think he wants that, but at the beginning he's asking if we could test our own water. And I'm kind of surprised that staff didn't say that we have done that already. So, and he mentioned that it would be at minimal financial impact. So based on that question about testing our own water, just to know our own product, and I believe that we're the wholesaler, so we should know some information about our own product, not the to the extent that we're going to partner in with other entities that want to fight this, but just on a minimal scale. And that's why I asked if that was feasible.
No, we have lots of information about our groundwater and where the PFAS is and what wells it has impacted. So we do have that information.
Yeah. Okay,
that's not what I suggested. That.
What did you suggest?
I suggested that if anyone on the board would like to, could we make available that they get tested for the PFAS and that they have in their body? That's all it was. Let's start somewhere, because I've been tested. Dennis has been tested. I don't know if the other eight have. That's all it was. It's probably $2,500.
I see.
That's all it was. Just a little starting small, and let's look and see. We're going to get other test results back, and then have a conversation. That's all it was.
Thank you for the clarification.
I'll write the check. Whoever wants to get tested, how's that?
Okay, then I just have, if General Counsel, may I ask this question?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Of course.
The second question is, if we were to ask Dr. Bartel back, how much would it cost us? Or is that something that it's usually offered to us?
He would come over. We could schedule a time for him to come over at no cost.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay.
I wanted to just briefly comment, piggyback on what General Manager Kennedy just said, and that is that there are folks that are going to challenge this. Who those people are, that's going to emerge over time, right? People don't usually file right away. These are really complicated. Typically, the setting of MCLs are based on health. So you have toxicological and epidemiological study that goes into that. Whether those are valid or not, that's a very complex scientific exercise. Also, cost. There's a question, EPA kind of redid their cost-benefit methodology for this particular MCL, as I understand it. So that will be controversial. Will people challenge it? Probably. Who those people are, we don't know yet, but that's something we can make inquiries about. And if nothing else, we can learn from others where the real challenges are. I know AWWA has been following this, perhaps NACWA. So there's other, especially in the trade associations, there's been a lot of comments that were done during the Federal Register process. So we can certainly learn more. And then the board, once they have additional information, can make decisions based on that.
Is Doug Davard, is your hand up?
Reinhardt.
Oh, Doug Reinhardt. Director Reinhardt.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know what to start to comment on this. I feel like we're slaying windmills here. So these standards, there have been comments all along about that through EPA, through AWWA and other organizations questioning this. You can get your own self tested, but that's not going to tell you what you're getting from water, because you may be ordering pizza every night. You may be going to McDonald's hamburger and getting those paper. There's all sorts of other, your carpet may be giving you some. There's all sorts of other places you can get PFAS from that don't come from water. So they have to, somehow isolate you and determine that. But I would, I understand what Director Sheldon is saying. I have sympathy for what he's trying to get at. But I mean, I would harken back to in the 70s, we're talking about standards that were set that they said 1 liter per day for 70 years. And we haven't gotten to that 70 years yet. So we don't even know what the standard, nobody knows what these standards are set at as to how accurate they are or how, but they are what they are. And as a retailer, we can't just tell our customers that, well, we just don't think those things are right. We've got to follow what the EPA says and what they come out with. And we can't, in any way, give our customers a feeling like they're not getting safe drinking water. So I understand what you're trying to say. That there's many people fighting these things, but I think the die is pretty well cast. And once it's cast, I can't think of a time when they've gone back and changed. Maybe I'm wrong there, but I can't think of one where they've gone back and changed the standard. It is what it is, and there's no way to find out whether the 70 years at 1 liter was effective or not, because they've already set the standard, so they cut it back. It is what it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That's it for the discussion. I'm not seeing any other lights or hands. Okay, let's move back to item one, our public hearing. I'd like to open the public hearing and call upon our general manager to proceed with the staff report.
Yes, Chris Olson will present this to the board.
Good evening, President Green, members of the board. Second here. Okay. Yeah. All right. Oh, that's the wrong one. Jeez. There we go. Okay. The public hearing to consider the need and desirability to levy a replenishment assessment, additional replenishment assessment, basin equity assessment, production requirement, production limitation, and surcharge and basin production percentage. We're going to start off by looking at a little bit of background here. So every April, we have a public hearing like this, where there's a requirement of the District Act. And it's to consider all those things I just said, the RA, the ARA, the BEA, BPP, production requirement, production limitation, and surcharge. So every year, also in March, at the March 20th board meeting, we go through the annual engineer's report. And at that reporting time, we determine that there is an annual basin overdraft and an accumulated basin overdraft condition. And that's part of the District Act, is a requirement for us to show that. And also, the data that's in that engineer's report is used in the attached resolutions we're going to go through. So just a quick summary. I'll do a summary and then more detail for each of the resolutions. So there's resolution A, B, C, D. Resolution A is finding that an annual or accumulated basin overdraft exists. This will require 6 votes from the board. Resolution B is necessary to levy a replenishment assessment, also 6 votes. Resolution C is the need to levy an additional replenishment assessment. This is 8 votes. And then resolution D, the necessity to establish a basin production percentage, limitation, surcharge, and basin equity assessment, also 6 votes. So a little more on each of the resolutions. The finding and determination regarding basin overdraft, resolution A. So this is the finding that the average annual overdraft, also be thought as the basin storage decreased for the last 5 years, is 103,700 acre feet, as defined in the District Act for calculating that. And also finding that the groundwater basin's accumulated overdraft as of the last day of the water year, June 30th of 23, is 189,000 acre feet. Resolution B is the need to levy a replenishment assessment. This is paid by all groundwater production. Again, this requires 6 votes, and that is to establish that RA at $344 per acre foot. Resolution C, need to levy an additional replenishment assessment and a fixed charge replenishment assessment. This is paid by all non-agricultural production, requiring 8 votes, and this is recommended to establish the ARA at $344 an acre foot. Also, it's the establishing the fixed charge replenishment assessment for smaller wells less than 2-inch diameter on less than an acre of land, for a 1 annual payment of $688. Looking at it graphically, the RA paid by all production, that's our groundwater producers, that's ag production. And just for your information, agricultural production is on the order of 500 acre feet a year. So it's a very small amount. That's $344. And then the ARA, which is paid by the producers, all non-ag production, that is another $344 for the total of $688 per acre foot. Looking at Resolution D, determining the need and desirability to levy a BPP-BEA production limitation and surcharge. So the recommendation is going to be to continue at 85%, setting the BPP at 85, establishing a base and equity assessment for each producer. The BEA is the amount, the additional amount, if a producer pumped over 85% to make it more of a fee comparable to Met Water. So we don't really want anyone pumping over 85% unless there's some program in place. On table one, the board packet has a list of each of the producers and what their associated BEA is. The average of all of them is $432 per acre foot. We do have an incentive going on right now. We have a $200 per acre foot reduction in the BEA to encourage pumping at this time as we've been dealing with PFAS and getting those wells up and running again. We also want to establish the production limitation of 100%. And for anyone that exceeded that 100%, there would be a surcharge of $2,000 per acre foot. So the recommendations are here for resolutions A, B, C, and D, as I've also just gone through and described them. So that concludes the presentation. Can take any comment and turn it back to you, President Green.
Okay. Do we have any comments or questions? Okay, Director Tran.
I do have a question regarding the dollar amounts for the levies, Resolution B and C. How are they comparable to last year or the last 3 years? Is it an increase, decrease, or we're staying the same?
This is a 10% increase from last year.
10% increase?
Right.
How do we come to 10%? Is there a formula that we plugged in and say this year it's going to be a 10% increase?
Yeah, based on our expected budget, our general fund expenses, how much money we need to collect for PFAS to pay for those facilities, our annual debt service. So we've figured out what our expenses are, and then we have estimated what our pumping should be, and then and using those numbers, we calculate what we think the RA should be to give us a balanced budget.
Okay, I've opened that public hearing, and now it's time for public hearing by our public speakers. I have one card, but anybody can come up. Paul Schoenbrecher.
Very much, Madam President and members of the board. Paul Schoenbrecher, General Manager at Mesa Water District. And I'm here to speak in support of your four resolutions. Your staff and John Kennedy did a very good job over several meetings rolling this out to the producers. Everybody's very happy that we have a full basin. And we're very happy of the rapid and thorough response that and we realize that it's really financial strength which is to meet this challenge, which is going to be construction costs, and that requires revenue from So the $688 replenishment assessment has been rolled out to the producers, and there was no opposition. I really think the only suggestion was, or question was, do we have enough money in our water purchase fund? So the push was kind of, more the other way, maybe higher rather than lower. So I went over the budget very thoroughly, and and certainly Mesa Water District supports that house.
Thank you very much. Does anyone else want to speak? I don't see any hands. Okay, then I'm going to, do you want any comment?
No, I don't have any comment, but I would like to, I think you can close the public hearing.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing. And, that's what I was
talking about. I'll take a shot at moving Resolution A, which is a finding and determination a groundwater basin overdraft exists.
Madam President, I have a question.
Yes, please.
The 688, what was the number before last year?
Right now, it's $624 an acre foot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We have a motion and a second.
Okay. Roll call, Director Mezquet.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Green.
Yes.
Director Meeks.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Sheldon.
No.
Director Tran.
Yes.
Director Wigan.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 9 yes votes, with Director Sheldon voting no.
Okay, moving on to
last slide there, yeah.
Okay, levying the replenishment assessment of $344 an acre foot for water produced during water year 2024-25. Oh, thank you, Chris.
Was that a motion that you made for Resolution B?
I don't think presidents can.
I move Resolution B.
Okay.
And I'll second that.
Roll call, Director Mezquet.
Yes.
Director Miller.
Yes.
Director Green.
Yes.
Director Meeks.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Sheldon.
No.
Director Tran. Director Wigan.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Resolution B carries with 8 yes votes, with Directors Sheldon and Tran voting no.
Okay, moving on to Resolution C.
I move Resolution C.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Okay. Roll call, Director Mezquet.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Green.
Yes.
Director Meeks.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Sheldon.
No.
Director Tran?
No.
Director Wigan?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Resolution C passes with 8 yes votes, with Directors Sheldon and Tran voting no.
Okay, and now moving to Reso D.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Mezquet?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran? Director Wigan?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay. Resolution D carries with 9 yes votes, with Director Tran voting no.
Okay.
All 4 resolutions pass.
And now we move on to the proposed budget.
Yeah, our CFO, Randy Fick, will present this.
Good evening, President Green, members of the board. This evening, we have consideration to approve the fiscal 24-25 budget. Here's a budget calendar. You've seen this quite often. We've been preparing and presenting the budget since mid-December and quite a few meetings discussing it. And this evening, we just had a public hearing to set the RA and the VPP, and now we have consideration to approve the fiscal 2024-25 budget. Here's the pie chart that was presented of the expenditures. It was presented at the March 6th board meeting. And these are the expenditures that require the RA of $688 an acre foot. And these have been gone over in detail over the last 2 months since we presented the draft budget. And there's been two changes to the draft budget since that period of time. And they've been minor, a total of $26,500 added to the expenditures. One, a general fund increase in the general manager's department for a membership for $1,500 to sustain SoCal. And then there's an increase in the planning and watershed budget of $25,000. And this is for a future water demand study, partnering with MODOC on that. And so these two small additions to the budget that was presented at March 6th board meeting didn't require an increase of the proposed RA back then of $688 an acre foot. It takes about $290,000 of expenses to move the RA $1. So therefore, the RA stated proposed $688 an acre foot. And with that, the recommendation is to approve the proposed fiscal year 2024-25 budget. And I can answer any questions.
Do we have any questions or comments? Director Nguyen, do you?
I don't.
Okay. Anybody else?
No.
Do I have a motion?
I just wanted to say we've gone over this in great detail in committee, so this is kind of anticlimactic that we're going to pass all this like without discussion, but we have gone through it, I assure you.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second.
Roll call, Director Mezqua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
No.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 9 yes votes, with Director Sheldon voting no.
Okay. Move on to the water resources summary.
That information is summarized in a packet.
Okay. Moving on to committee conferences, meeting reports. ComLedge, Director Bilodeau.
Well, actually, we voted on our actions tonight, and the minutes are in the packet. Thank you.
Okay. GWRS, Chair Whitaker.
Yes. In the packet, there were 4 informational items only on page 193 of our packet.
Okay. Water issues.
Also, details in the packet between pages 106 to 143. Also, a recap on page 194. But there were 6 action items in that meeting, so details are contained.
Okay. Admin Finance, Director Yeo.
Yes, the culmination of the several meetings that we had is encapsulated in item 15, I believe. Thank you, everybody, for your vote of confidence that it's a good budget. Thank you.
Do we have any committee conference meetings attended at district expense? Director Yeo?
Yes, thank you, President Green. President Green, General Manager Kennedy, and Alicia Duncan and I attended the rededication of the Yorba Linda's PFAS treatment plan. They are now calling it Wayne Miller PFAS treatment plan, commemorating the great work that the former director Miller and his contribution for the people of Yorba Linda and Yorba Linda Water District. So I believe that staff is assisting us drafting a resolution commemorating his leadership and achievement. So thank you very much.
Okay. Moving on to verbal reports, the president's report, I will
deferred. Director Yeo talked about it. The AQUA report, I'll just tell you very quickly that we formed a strategic planning committee, and there is one person from every region. General Manager?
Nothing to report.
Okay. Director's report? Don't see anything. General Counsel?
Nothing to report except that there is no closed session tonight. We included the item listed as a placeholder, but there is no need for a closed session this evening.
Perfect. We are adjourned.